Oh my God.
She's not like anyone else. You wonder why she captured you like a firefly and makes you shine like you never could alone.
Hey everybody, welcome to Drive Through HR. Happy, is it Thursday, William?
Indeed.
It's Thursday.
Indeed.
Eric, thank you. Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Happy Thursday. A little more confidence with that. So, good, dude, good. Best, maybe the best pre-show ever that I think I can remember. Got to get my thoughts straight here for a second. So, whew, breaking a sweat. Welcome, everybody. Brian Wimp and William Tincup coming to you live talking about HR with the people that care about HR and actually know something about HR. So, let's get to our guests because this is going to be a show to remember. I've got a feeling about that one. So, Eric Meyer, welcome back to Drive Through HR.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks, William. Thanks for having me.
So let's, if you would, introduce yourself. There's got to be one or two people that don't know who you are. You're like, you know, sort of famous. And so we got, and we have millions of listeners. So please, introduce yourself.
All right. I am the notorious Eric B. Meyer on Twitter. It's Eric_B_Meyer. I am an employment attorney in Philadelphia with the law firm Dilworth Paxson, where I do all kinds of stuff in support of HR and companies, you name it, I probably do it. And let's get it out of the way. The best way to connect with me, you can find all my contact information on my blog, theemployerhandbook.com.
Fantastic. Eric, let's do the top of mind. What is what's occupying a lot of your thoughts these days here in February of 2013?
I don't know if it's the short month or what, but a lot of what I'm seeing recently, what's really grabbing my attention on the internet, is the dumb stuff that employees are doing recently. I mean, more so than usual with respect to Facebook and Twitter. it's becoming like a daily occurrence, at least in terms of grabbing the headlines. I saw just yesterday there was a KFC employee who was sticking her tongue in the mashed potatoes. I know there's a Beastie Boys song that has something to do with that, but this woman was sticking her tongue in the mashed potatoes, and she got fired. So, sorry, guys.
Is mashed potatoes a metaphor at this point?
It's a meta, vibe, dude.
Yeah, yeah, right? This was literally a mountain of mashed potatoes. So this was, I forget what state, and I'm sure it's an isolated incident, and I don't want to bash KFC. They did the right thing by getting rid of this employee. But I'm seeing that a lot recently, from sticking a tongue in the mashed potatoes to I saw someone posting a cheap tipper's receipt on Reddit at a restaurant, and
Applebee's.
I think that cost her job. Yeah, Applebee's. That's exactly.
Oh, that was a big one. Yeah.
Yeah, Brian and I know the one of the people that run social media for Jill McFarland for Applebee's, and you know, I mean, running social media for Applebee's is probably hard enough, and when something like that kind of comes down the pike, thanks for making my job, you know, that much better. Appreciate you.
Yeah. I mean, but I mean, it's not just when these employees have their free time. I wrote about a case, I think it was last week, where a woman takes FMLA from a hospital in Detroit because of her, you know, horribly bad back. She ends up going down to Mexico on vacation, takes pictures of her Mexican vacation where she's on a motorboat, you know, with her bad back and all. She's got two beers in one hand, throws those pictures up on Facebook. She forgets, or maybe she remembers, that she's Facebook friends with her coworkers. And her coworkers tell the company, you know, what the hell's going on here? We thought this, our coworker was on FMLA. And she comes back from her vacation. She lies to her employer, tells them that she needed wheelchairs at all the airports. And then they confront her with the pictures, and she admits that she was lying, and they get rid of her. And she actually has the hubris to sue for FMLA violations and ultimately lost. But
nice.
Yeah. But
let's talk a little bit about social media policies, because it's not quite 08, and you know the newness is probably worn off a little bit, and I'm sure that there's been a lot of modifications in the game. What's your general take when people kind of approach you and say, what should my policy be? How should I approach creating a quote-unquote social media policy?
Well, you know, I still take the approach that it's really different strokes for different folks. And I think it really gets back to what the company's culture is and what you're hoping that your employees get out of social media. Everyone at this point, every company, no one's naive enough to think that they can ban social media, that they can tell their employees not to have a Facebook profile or get on Twitter, things like that. So it's a question of, you know, are you in a position as the company to take advantage of your employees' social media use? Do you want to take advantage? Do you want their what they say and do online to try and benefit your business? Or are you of the mind that, you know, our employees can do whatever they want online, but just don't let it impact the business badly? So, you know, we still have companies that have social media policies, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, but social media policies that are very rules-based. You can do this, you can't do this. You still have businesses that have more guideposts and guidelines. You know, we suggest that you don't tweet while drunk, or you know, think before you hit send, or you know, think about what would happen if your mom read your tweet or something like that. You know, just kind of imparting common sense on the employees. So, and then you have companies who combine the two, some guidelines, some rules. But, you know, that's what I'm seeing. More and more companies are drafting social media policies and aren't ignoring it. And I think what I hope we would see going forward is not just the policy, but more training. Because, you know, a policy is great, but really just immersing your employees in what the company's vision is on social media and what they expect employees to get out of it, I think that's the most effective way to do it.
Is there a and you know, this is going to be kind of wide open, but is there a mining an aspect for business to mine data, social data, as it relates to their employees, and kind of give them some type of predictors of people that will be good employees or people that will stay around for forever or be good brand ambassadors? Is there a way, and I'm thinking about like Facebook interest and the things that you like and the things that you champion or the tweets that you kind of promote or anything like that. Is there a way, first of all, can employers mine that data? Then maybe even if that is a true should they mine that data?
Okay. Can they? Sure. I mean, we all know there's been a lot of attention, I think unfair attention drawn to it because of the few bad employers who demand social media passwords as a condition of employment. I mean, that really doesn't happen so much at all. But can employers go out there and see what's on the internet and determine who's going to be a good fit based on what you post on your Facebook profile, your likes, your interests? Sure. I mean, I think that's information that's at your disposal. Why wouldn't you use it? The concern, of course, for many employers is, well, what happens if we learn that someone has cancer, or we learn that someone has a disability, or you know, we learn about some other protected class information? Well, okay, you learn about it, but you just don't act upon it. Don't let that motivate your decision. So, yeah, I mean, things we learn, like, for instance, you know, someone could come to my blog and say, you know, that Meyer, I don't know if he's such a good hire. He's pretty snarky. He doesn't write too well. Lots of grammar errors. But if I see another employee with a, you know, with well-written blog or internet entries or good interests, yeah, why wouldn't you consider that person over someone else you just don't have that information about?
What about larger ramifications of big data and employment law? It's all the rage right now in the HR technology world. Everything can get you data, your payroll data, your performance data, your succession, applicant tracking, like all of that. Everyone wants to kind of roll all that up and kind of move that into predictive. What can we forecast now that we know these things? What can we use this data? You know, as you look at that space, what is what's good about that, or where do you think that's going to kind of intersect with employment law?
Well, I mean, I touched upon a little bit before, the more overt stuff. So I go on someone's Facebook page and I learn protected class information that I wouldn't otherwise know. I mean, I'm probably going to know from interviewing them, obviously, I'm going to I have a general idea of what I'm going to know what their sex is. I'm generally going to know what their age is, give or take. I'm probably going to know what their race is, but there are certain things you may not know about a disability. You may not know that someone's pregnant. You may not know that there is a history of a particular disease in someone's family. Someone may post that they just went in a breast cancer walk because both their mother and father died from cancer. So that's genetic information that you'd pick up. I mean, if we act as employers on any of this stuff, if we let this affect our decision-making as to who to hire and who not to hire, we're going to have a problem under either federal anti-discrimination law or, you know, various state and local laws. So that's certainly a problem there. But even without intending to discriminate, if employers put too much emphasis behind what they can mine through social media, it's possible that there could be an intersection with employment law in that you may, as the employer, unintentionally be disparately impacting a particular race or national origin. You know, there are probably certain protected classes that use Twitter more than others, LinkedIn more than others, Facebook more than others. If you're going to rely on a particular source of information, you may be doing so by unintentionally excluding a class of applicants from your hiring pool. So, you know, that's a problem that could rear up in what they call a disparate impact claim. And I know that the EEOC, as part of its new strategic enforcement plan, I was the one person who actually read it.
Cool.
Is focus? Yeah, it was.
I knew somebody. Somebody had to read it.
Right. Well, someone wrote it. I think a bunch of us read it. I don't want to bash the EEOC. I do a lot of work for them. But one of their big points of emphasis over the next couple years is looking into hiring discrimination. And I think one of the areas within hiring discrimination that I would guess they'll focus on is this whole idea of disparate impact. So hiring through social media. So I think that's something that employers need to be cognizant of if they're going to use social media as part of their hiring process.
Nice. What do you think of the triangle of medical marijuana, social, and employment law?
Well,
that's a party right there.
A triangle. Yeah.
Hey, don't mention this triangle unless no.
the medical marijuana triangle. Well, let's put it this way. Medical marijuana is only legal in how many states now? What, handful, two hands full? So here in Pennsylvania, not an issue. Medical marijuana is not legal. So if employees are using drugs, you don't have to employ them. You can fire them. Even in states where medical marijuana is legal, some of the courts, the way they've looked at it is, you know, the employer, separate and apart from the legalities of medical marijuana, have the right to enforce drug-free workplace policies. It's generally a safety issue, among other things. The courts have held that, you know, if I take medical marijuana but I test positive, and I violate an employer's drug-free policy, that the employer can get rid of that employee. I suppose I'll make it a square rather than just a triangle. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, if I as an employer am suffering through a disability, I have the right to get a reasonable accommodation from my employer if doing so will allow me to perform the essential functions of my job. And I suppose, in theory, medical marijuana could be an accommodation. So if you have more progressive, so to speak, employers who will put aside the drug-free rules, make a carve-out, so to speak, and allow for medical marijuana as long as it's not going to compromise workplace productivity or safety, there could be a way to marry the two.
Well, fantastic to know, just in case. I want to get a job in one of those states and hit the weed hard.
The cataracts act up, you know.
Hey, that's right. You never know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm aging. So.
Right.
So I'm going to do a quick reset, everybody. You are listening to drive-through HR. We are on with the notorious Eric Meyer. Not that notorious, but damn, it sounds cool. So, love asking this question. So, what has been what's the next frontier that you just see? And, oh yeah, I asked it just a couple of days ago, and I thought the answer was really, really intriguing. What's the next legal frontier that maybe people aren't anticipating that's going to pop up from an employment law standpoint, and you're going to just see an uptick in litigation? Like, say, just go a year out. What's kind of your futurism kind of hat on with this?
Oh, let's see. If I were going to buy futures in employment law areas for 2013 and 14, I would buy them in wage and hour. I think that just continues to get more complicated and just a fertile ground for plaintiffs' lawyers, not to be pejorative, but just to make a good living. I think another area where you're going to see a lot of action is in the Americans with Disabilities Act. And what is and is not a reasonable accommodation, especially when there's some sort of interplay between the Family and Medical Leave Act, where you get 12 weeks of leave in a 12-month period, but if someone still can't come back to work after 12 weeks, the Americans with Disabilities Act probably kicks in, and maybe giving someone some more time off might be an accommodation. There could be some fights over what's reasonable and what's not. And then finally, I think, what the National Labor Relations Board is going to continue to do with social media in the non-union work setting. So National Labor Relations Act covers employers both unionized and non-unionized. We saw a fair amount of activity over the past year with the National Labor Relations Board trying to limit the scope of what they consider to be overly broad social media policies, and also getting involved where they thought that employees were being unfairly disciplined for criticizing workplace conditions like, you know, wages and benefits and a crappy boss and things like that. So I think that's going to continue to be big. Of course, there's an issue as to what kind of authority the National Labor Relations Board has right now, because without getting into the weeds, the constitutionality of President Obama's recess appointments to the board, I'm already dorking it up too much. But I think that's something that's going to continue to be big. The wage and hour, Americans with Disabilities Act, and social media vis-a-vis the National Labor Relations Board. How about that?
Nice. Eric, when I present on social, I usually tell people, the audience, that EEO is about 10 years behind the real world in how we use social, especially in recruiting. But first of all, tear that apart. How far is our practical applications and the way that we use social, especially in recruiting, but if not in all of our employee communications, et cetera, from the law, from the actual, like, what is stated around EEO?
You know, the law is behind because none of this stuff is explicit in the law. However, that being said, the way the law really looks at it when you get into the courtroom is it's just another form of communication, and you analyze it that way. So in the context, but the difference is that there's the internet remembers. There's always a record. So and that case I was talking about at the outset where the woman put her pictures on Facebook, different form of communication. She certainly could have called her coworkers and said, hey, I'm on FMLA, but I'm having this great time in Mexico drinking beers and going on a speedboat. But instead she put the pictures up there, so it made it easier for the employer to just nail her on it. So I think when these matters come before the courts may not be savvy about the tech and how Facebook works, and they may need a lot of guidance, but ultimately it just comes down to being another form of communication. So I don't really think the law is too far behind on social media in its application to discrimination actions and FMLA and that kind of stuff.
Nice. What's your current take on bring your own device and employment law?
Ah, good question. I just did a seminar on a couple seminars on bring your own device. I mean, I think it's inevitable that you know, as employers, unless there's a really, really ripe security issue, that employers have to, in order to you know, address that they have to provide their own really secured BlackBerry or whatever it is, I think it's inevitable that employers are going to have to start to embrace, and they are, bring your own device. It's going to attract the best talent, the best young talent, because employees want that flexibility. They want to be able to, you know, only carry around one device rather than two. And I think one area that employers are going to have to get their head around to attract the talent, to make this more palatable for employees, is respecting the privacy of employees within that device. So, you know, I have my own device, but I have my work email and I have my Gmail. I wouldn't want my employer to have the ability to look into my Gmail on my iPhone. So I think employers are going to have to address that in policy as to, you know, what, if you bring your own device, what on that device is ours, what information is ours, what's yours, what are we going to look at, what aren't we going to look at. Other minor, you know, lesser issues are the device gets lost, who pays for it, who's going to pay for the data plan, are you going to be allowed to jailbreak your iPhone, download whatever apps you want. I mean, I think these are the things that the tweaking. But just as a general idea of bring your own device, I think it's inevitable.
In terms of individual versus company, who owns the followers, the friends, and the connections?
Good question. Absent an agreement to the contrary, and I'm not I'm not really an intellectual property lawyer, but based on my experience and just kind of anecdotal experience and what I've read, it's generally the employees. If it's an employee account, the employee owns the connection. So if I left my firm tomorrow, I would argue that I own all my Facebook friends, that I owe all my Twitter followers, that I own all my LinkedIn connections. If, however, I am getting set up through an employer account, let's say I'm the social media manager for the employer account, totally different story. You're going to have a written document, in theory, which defines who owns the connections, who owns the accounts, things like that. And then as the employer, once the employee up and leaves, you're going to change the password on the account right away, so that the employee is locked out. But if it's an employer account, then in all likelihood, the followers, the connections, the friends belong to the employer. If it's an employee account, they belong to the employee.
Hey, Eric, this is Brian. I'll give you a scenario, and we haven't really seen this happen that I've heard of or that's been publicized yet. So you've got somebody starting to dig into a bunch of business intelligence. So you've got a sales team that's really digging into the LinkedIn kind of open public connections of a competing company and their sales team, and then just going head to head using that information to not only pick off the sales talent but also to dig into who the clients are. Do you see anything bubbling up around kind of that kind of more public IP issues? And I know you're not an IP lawyer, got it? But
No. But that does come up in the context of, you know, you have an employee leave company A, goes to company B. The question is, are the connections considered trade secrets as, let's say, a customer list? And the courts that have looked at it thus far, once the connections are out there in the public and the effort really isn't made to hide the identities of those connections, that is to say, if I could go into LinkedIn and I could just basically recreate or find out who all your staff is, who all your employees are, who all your customers are, I can make a play for them as a competitor. I can certainly make a play for your customers. If that information is just put out in the public domain, might be a bit of a different issue for your employees. If these employees have contracts with non-competition agreements and things like that, then the new employer could be potentially sued for, you know, a variety of reasons. But you know, generally, once the information is, the more information that's put out in the public domain, the less likelihood that the employer who supposedly is guarding this stuff as trade secrets can argue that this information actually constitutes a trade secret.
Perfect. So We're going to switch gears and go a little bit more personal here. So if you weren't lawyering, what would you want to do? If you weren't in law, what would you want to do career-wise?
I know when I was an undergrad way back when, I had just, you know, designs on and more like dreams of becoming a sports agent. But I know that's not really feasible right now because I'm not an athlete. My roommate wasn't an athlete, and there's really not much athletic prowess that runs in my family. So there's really no one for me to represent. separate and apart
that's
from
that. That's pragmatic. I got the pragmatic thought process there.
Yeah, yeah. Separate and apart from that, I don't know. I mean, I was probably something to do with sports. Back in college, I did a lot of. I was involved in sports radio, and I covered the Philadelphia Flyers for a now defunct internet hockey outfit. So yeah, probably something to do with sports.
Good answer. So what is your most hated sports franchise?
Oh, it's simple. It's the New York Yankees.
Oh, spoken like a true Philly. I love it. That
yep.
is that's good. What's the one that you? I mean, were you always a Philly guy? We'll stay on the sports.
Sure.
Sports. This is so much
sure.
more interesting than employment
yeah.
law. Let's be honest.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. Long story short, I was born in Philadelphia. A lot of my family's from Massachusetts, so I split my allegiances when I was young. I am a Red Sox and Bruins fan and a Sixers and Eagles fan. Really didn't work out for me for a long time until 2004, when the Red Sox finally beat the choking Yankees and went on to win the World Series, hence my intense hatred for the Yankees.
Oh, excellent. So, if you were going to play a sport professionally, what would it be?
I ideally,
sorry.
Yeah, no. If I could just snap my fingers and be an excellent blank, I would be a hockey player. I mean, I would definitely, yeah, I would definitely want to be just, you know, the Wayne Gretzky or whomever it is now of hockey, and that would be my sport.
First hockey game ever went to was in Philly, and I was right on the ice, like two seats up. It was fantastic seats, and it was ridiculous. Didn't know it was how big those guys were, especially with like 6-inch skates. I mean, they were like just monsters, and it was awesome. So
it's a fantastic sport.
Yeah, it was a great story too, by the way. You know what? We got about a minute and 45 seconds left. So, what are some places, conferences, things that you would recommend for HR practitioners to try and, you know, go to, participate in in 2013?
Sure. Let's see. SHRM Legislative Conference is coming up in under a month, right? Washington, D.C., I forget the exact date. I apologize, but if you go to SHRM.org, not to be the shill, the SHRM shill, but if you go to SHRM.org, you can find out when that is, and then they have their annual over the summer. You can certainly get involved with your local SHRM affiliates and organizations. I know I personally do some work with the SHRM Lehigh Valley outfit, and you may also want to get involved with your local chambers of commerce. And, of course, I think a great area to bone up and make connections in the social media, in the HR world is either through Twitter or through LinkedIn. Take advantage of LinkedIn groups, and great way to meet people and learn about HR, become a better HR practitioner.
There you go. Eric, always a pleasure, man. We appreciate you being one of the forerunners of lawyers and attorneys and law people in law getting on to social all in. It's appreciated. You do good work. Enjoyed lunch. We'll have to have you back, folks. We are out of here. Have a ridiculously damn good Thursday. We're gone. Or not. We might not just play the music. Okay.
You want to hear any more stories?
There we go. We're playing.
Earth and gone, shot into space.